Welcome to Historically Thinking, a program devoted to all kinds of historical knowledge and to the ways that we achieve it. I'm your host, Al Zambone, of the Department of History at Augustana College. Our website is historicallythinking.org, where you can subscribe, find more information about our guests, links, and related readings. Our email address is mail@historicallythinking.org. We'd love to hear from you. Hello. In the next few weeks, first-year students here at Augustana College will begin to, at last, declare their majors. At other colleges, this is done much earlier. At some, announcing to other first-year students that you're undeclared is like ringing a bell to announce that you have leprosy. And in some families, it's customary for babies to declare their college major before they can walk. My guest, Michael Edmondson, would agree, I think, that declaring a major is a poor substitute for examining what you want your purpose to be in life. In his new book, Marketing Your Value, 9 Steps to Navigate Your Career, he urges his readers to examine their values, capacities, abilities, and desires, and then, and only then, assess potential opportunities. Despite its title, it's really a kind of ethical inquiry disguised as a business self-help book. Mike Edmondson is the Associate Vice President of Career Development at Augustana College. He received his PhD in history at Temple University on Herbert Hoover's diplomacy of all things, and has been at various times in his life a faculty member at an experiential learning program, an HR manager in industry, and a lecturer in entrepreneurship at Drexel University. As you can probably infer from some of those facts, he is a native of Philadelphia, and if we had the money for it, we'd end the podcast with the outro of the Rocky theme, Fly Eagles Fly, or Kate Smith singing God Bless America, and if you get that, then you're from Philadelphia. Okay, Mike, let me quote you to yourself.
Sure.
You say, global unemployment and underemployment trends represent significant issues to anyone who wants to launch or navigate their career. And when I read that, I thought you were sugarcoating it, because I've been reading Tyler Cowen, as it turns out, his book Average is Over.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out you have two.
Mm-hmm.
And I recommend it to anyone who wants to keep their blood cold in a hot summer day. This is not yet, but eventually this will work. Cowen is basically projecting into the future and imagining that things are going to get worse for lots of people while getting better for a very small number of people. I mean, this is part of the inequality argument, but Cowen is much bigger and more sophisticated in the way he speaks about it than I think most people are. He says, basically, it's going to be coming where we're going to be, for example, where we're going to be hyper measured. We're always going to be measured. And if we don't live up to our measurements, we'll be let go.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's pretty much right on the ball. And thanks for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to talk today. Yeah, it's pretty clear that there's a global jobs war ongoing, has been for about the past 10 years and will continue in the future. And there's about 7 billion people alive in the world today. UN projects that to go to 9 billion in the next 20 years. And according to most figures, there's about 1.5 billion or so people, give or take, that need a good job around the world. There's about 10 to 15 million people in the United States that need a good job. And if you add that, add on top of that, the number of people that are unhappy at their job, then you're talking about tens of millions of people in the United States. So getting a, not just a good job, but a job that has meaning and purpose and fulfillment is probably a human's most important task next to feeding and clothing themselves and getting shelter.
And yet, we're unhappy with our work.
We are very unhappy with our work.
We don't know where it's going to come from.
Nope.
And we're facing a situation in which it's going to be actually harder to get work.
That's correct. Two researchers from Oxford last year wrote a report called Jobs, the Job Market in 2034, Frey and Osborne from Oxford. And they concluded that 47% of the U.S. job market could be automated in the next 20 years. And they said it's diabolically tricky, that's their phrase, diabolically tricky to pick a major that's going to be relevant in that future job market.
And in terms of automation, Cowen and others have suggested that essentially the key questions will be, in the future. Are you good at working with intelligent machines or not? He gives a joke that basically textile factories consist of a man and a dog, a man to take care of the dog and the dog to keep the man from touching a machine.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. So are your skills a complement to the skills of the computer, or is the computer doing better without you? Second question. This is worst of all. Are you competing against the computer?
Right. Yeah, I mean, you are. You're familiar with Bloom's taxonomy, right? So the revised Bloom's taxonomy.
What is Bloom's taxonomy for those who aren't?
So it's an organizational structure for education. So in other words, when you're teaching a group of people, whether they're kindergarten students or graduate school students, it's a framework you can use for outcomes. And so the top of the Bloom's taxonomy now is creativity. And that was revised by one of Bloom's students in 2001. And so I say this because if you're listening, you need to demonstrate some level of creativity. If not now, you will be in the future that Cohen and others talk about, because it is going to be so competitive. So maybe it is just you and the machine, mm-hmm. but then you need to be creative with that machine and produce a product that's cheaper, better, faster than the competitor. So your ability to be creative, whether you're a history major, philosophy major, marketing, accounting, doesn't matter, is going to be paramount to your success.
He also suggests, and I would love to talk to him about this, Cowan, I'm sorry to bang on about this.
No, that's okay.
That there are a number of what we would call soft skills, like conscientiousness.
Yep.
That are going to be of extreme importance. And he points out that across the world, men fail at conscientiousness.
Absolutely. It's the non-cognitive skills that are going to allow you to be chosen for a job, not the cognitive skills. We don't have a day-long session here.
Yeah.
Let's just put on the back burner that, cognitively speaking, if you go to one college, you're going to be as well-trained as you go to another college. Let's just put that argument to the side. It's your non-cognitive skills, your ability to demonstrate professionalism, your ability to demonstrate empathy, your ability to demonstrate collaboration, the ability to work independently while being part of a team. These are all non-cognitive skills that employers will say 9 out of 10 times, that's the deciding factor why I hired someone. Mm-hmm. It's really important to do that, because if I've got 90 resumes for a position that I need to fill, every one of those 90 has graduated from college. Let's say half have graduated with honors. Let's say most of those have an internship. But what it comes down to is your ability to market your value. That's why I wrote the book. And your ability to demonstrate that value to a complete stranger that you're going to ask for a job. So that all comes down to your non-cognitive skills.
And these are going to be the skills that we're going to be navigating increasingly technologically bizarre to us.
Absolutely.
A world of driverless cars.
Yep.
In which you figure, okay, starting in 2020 or even now, we've got 20 years for cars to switch over.
So yep.
We're looking at basically, what is that, 2035?
Yep.
2040, we're going to be in a world of autonomous vehicles,
yep.
Which puts a lot of taxi drivers out of business.
Sure does.
Puts a lot of 18 very good jobs and driving 18-wheelers yep. out of business. We've got a world of package delivery. Mm-hmm. When the drones start delivering packages, yep. Pizzas. A lot of other entry-level jobs, gone.
That's why Frey and Osborne said half of the jobs are going to be automated.
I mean, UPS, great jobs for almost 100 years in jeopardy.
Yep.
We've even got a machine Cowan mentions there's a one experiment to find at the University of Illinois to take statistics and print it out into prose, simple stuff. Most mm-hmm. of UPI, AP, well, UPI is dead, isn't it?
Yeah.
But AP, basically, that's dead. And there's even now a software that is doing a decent job of grading papers. My job is over.
Right.
Adjuncts are over.
No, look at Khan Academy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, Khan Academy now has Bill Gates money behind it.
Right.
And it's a wonderful tool for students. So, it's this.
When you put that together with something that's able to grade a paper.
Yep.
Well,
I know.
Have it.
Yeah. No, the earth is moving underneath our feet, and only those that can survive are going to be able to adapt and a deal with the new environment.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, there aren't too many that are doing that.
So you say in terms of manage, this is really good, scary stuff.
Right.
In terms of managing this chaos,
right,
this uncertainty, you talk about three C's: complexity, climate, cultivate.
Right.
What do you mean? Let's go through those. Complexity.
Okay. So complexity means just that, understanding that the world is indeed complex and will continue to be complex.
Mm-hmm.
And all too often we deal, especially with college students, that they want a high degree of certainty, and they've declared a major and they think, okay, I'll have a job for the rest of my life in this. Well, you've got to realize that complexity is part of your job environment, and your job is going to change, and you're going to have to learn to deal with that complexity. Do you have the skills, traits, and habits to deal with that complexity? And some don't, and they'll get laid off, and then they can't get rehired, or they're not willing to move to a different location. You know, that's an issue in and of itself with today's generation. Are they willing to move to where the jobs are? And while it's true that you can work anywhere thanks to technology, some places still require a physical presence.
Correct.
So are you willing to move for a job? That's a question I ask many seniors, because most don't. They want to be near home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, but right, there's a price to pay for that.
Right.
So you have to be ready to adapt to that complexity. Yeah.
Climate.
So climate for me deals with the immediate economic situation that we're in. So climate is like, for example, the average income in the United States. Again, it's going to vary, but it's somewhere around 45,000 to 50,000. A lot of seniors think, oh, I can definitely make 60,000, 70,000 out of the gate. Really? Actually, 2/3 of recent college grads are earning less than 30,000. That's another part of the climate. So I put climate in there so that it can help manage your expectations.
Mm-hmm.
You really need to understand like what you're getting yourself involved in. If you're expecting a $90,000 salary, it's highly unlikely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some are getting it, but you're talking about 0.01% here.
Right.
It's rare. It's rare.
We would say not statistically significant.
That's correct. That's a good phrase. Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
And then finally, cultivate.
Cultivate. So cultivate is when you take a look at yourself and ask yourself, well, what, think of the word cultivation. What does that mean? To grow, right? And to achieve some kind of long-term sustainability. What can you do to cultivate yourself? And people think, I'm done learning. I've graduated. I have my college diploma. I'm not going to graduate school. I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
You're never done. You've got to cultivate to lifelong learning. And if you can do that, you'll be wildly successful, because anybody that's interviewing you will get a sense that, oh, this person really is well-read. They're up to date on the latest news in this field. And they've cultivated a sense of purpose. And you can just tell that. And I've interviewed hundreds of people, and it's pretty clear that the person that's cultivated themselves and others that are just looking for a job.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I don't want someone that just wants a job. I need someone that's cultivated themselves and is committed to lifelong growth, because you're going to have to grow with me, because I'm not done growing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't ever want to be done growing.
And the only way of increasingly, the only way of managing the chaos,
yeah,
is to continually reiterate, cultivate yourself.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, for my staff here, they have to read a book a term, you know, and they're all seasoned professionals. Well, you're going to read a book. Let's go. We're going to stay on top of things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important that everyone, you know, in your environment has a sense of that.
You discuss also as part of this, developing positive uncertainty.
Yes.
I think you've touched on this a little bit, but what do you mean by that?
Yeah, knowing that going forward, things aren't going to go as smoothly as possible. And in fact, you shouldn't seek out certainty, because as soon as you seek out security or certainty, what you're doing is you're shutting yourself off from other possibilities, right? Seneca, the philosopher, once said that luck is the intersection of where opportunity meets preparedness.
Did he really say that?
I don't know, but I like it. I'm not going to steal the attribution. I'm going to give it to Seneca.
I'm really suspicious about that.
Probably, but it sounds good, doesn't it? It sounds good.
It does.
So, but, you know, someone said luck is where opportunity meets preparedness.
The Greek philosopher Anonymous.
Yeah, there you go. Absolutely. But I like that, because it's a simple way for people to ask themselves two questions. Am I prepared? And are my eyes and ears open for the next opportunity? And I see this all the time in my office. Students will come in and I will give them opportunities, jobs, internships, job shadows, and they'll shoot me down.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, Albert, I'm giving you these three opportunities. Well, no, it's not what I want. How do you know if you haven't tried? And that's what really saddens me, is that I'm trying to help you and not tell you what to do, actually just give you opportunities, and you won't open your eyes or ears to them. And it was so bad for one student. I said, you know, you're getting in your own way. You're shooting me down. And he said, you know, my mom tells me that all the time. I'm like, well, maybe mom was right this time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is the first part of your book, is basically coming to grips,
yeah,
with your personality.
Absolutely.
Who you are.
Who are you?
Your values.
Right.
Your virtues.
Right.
Your vices.
Yep.
And deciding what your purpose is.
Right. And that's some people don't like to look at themselves that way.
No, no kidding.
Right? It's scary. It's really scary, in fact. But it's a necessity. If you're going to survive and thrive in this chaotic world, you're going to have to know yourself better than anybody.
So know thyself is the first part
of it. Absolutely.
This is one of the things that's very cool about this book, is it really is very liberal artsy.
Oh, it is. Well, my PhD is in history, so of course.
Exactly.
Right, and it has like over 200 footnotes, of course. That's the historian in me, right?
Self-published, but with 200 footnotes.
But with 200 footnotes. I know, it was great. Yeah, you know, my friends kill me for that. I'm like, I'm a trained historian. Get over it.
It's sorry, it's a reflex.
Right, yeah. It is.
So what's wrong with following your passion?
There's actually nothing wrong with following your passion. And here's what I want to help people understand. You can follow your passion as long as you are fiscally responsible and understand your obligations. So if you have loans, if you have a health issue, if you have outstanding bills, and you want to, I'm just going to say, be an artist. Okay, great. And you can, all types of artists in the world. And you're trying to make a living as an artist, and you're not making any money, and you're not fulfilling your obligations. Here's what I would recommend. Still make your art, but get a day job. I don't care what it is. Make coffee, drive a taxi, I don't care. Do something to bring in the money so you can manage those fiscal responsibilities, pay your debts back, and at nights and on the weekends, follow your passion. All too often, people think there's a one-dimensional approach to life. Mm-hmm. If I'm not selling my paintings, then I might as well just give up.
Right.
Why? Why in the world, especially today, put your paintings online, mm-hmm, create social media accounts, draw people to your site. You know, you can go to flea markets now. They're all in every town in America, mm-hmm, around the world. Sell your art that way on the weekends and at nights. And during the day, go bring in some money. Now, is that hard work? Yep. Might you not sleep as much? Probably. Are you living with passion, though? Yep. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I always tell people you can make choices or make excuses. I'd rather you make a choice than make progress instead of making excuses.
It's there's a great book called Don't Quit Your Day Job.
Right.
Which is, of course, we use as an insult.
Right.
But actually, through most of history, has been the way it worked.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Anthony Trollope was able to write, 3 hours a day, 500 words every 15 minutes, and while sort of popularizing the post office box.
Yep.
And also the penny stamp.
Yep.
You know, I mean, he was his professional life is as rich as his writing life.
Of course. And, you know, Daily Rituals is it's not new now. It's a couple years old. It's a Daily Rituals is a book. Mm-hmm. And the author took a look at like 50 famous people and their daily rituals. And most of them had full-time jobs.
Yeah.
And then a lot of them were writers. Mm-hmm. And they wrote in like 2 or 4 hour segments around their day job. And once you read it, you're like, wow. If they can do it, then why can't I do it? Yeah,
we're going to do a future program on basically just that.
Great.
Podcast.
Great.
You know, there's a problem that a lot of people with a BA in history who want to write something say I can't do it. But it's a problem for a lot of people, some of whom are sitting in this building or behind this microphone right here, fail to realize that daily ritual is really key to any creative activity.
Well, it really is. And it's important for people to understand that daily ritual can allow you to do so much more than you ever thought possible. And it's a shame because not everybody, you know, feels that way.
And at the same time, it is, you discussed two streams of income.
Yes.
Which I highly talk about that.
So two streams of income came to me probably in my 30s because my wife and I had two children and I was teaching and that wasn't enough. And going to grad school. So I realized, well, I have a few extra hours during the week. And I actually started working. Now, you and I are both old enough to remember video stores.
I don't know what that
is. Right. That's right. We're both old enough. And so my buddy actually owned a video store. I said, look, I need a brain, nothing against video store owners or anything.
Certainly
I said,
not.
I need a brain dead job because I'm studying for graduate school. I'm teaching. I need some extra money. He goes, come work at my store. And so I did that. And then I realized, wait a minute. if I can do this, why can't I start my own consulting company and still teach on the side? So that's eventually what I did, you know, a few years later. And I realized that you, especially as technology advanced, you can easily have passive income or use technology to for that second income while you're working your day job. Right.
Again, historically, this is nothing new.
It is not. No, it's not. That's the beauty of all this.
Back when you say 90% of everyone was a farmer.
Right.
All farmers also woodworked or they did something. You see this with the Amish, right?
I mean, yep.
And the both of us from Southeast Pennsylvania originally, the Amish farm, sure, but they also sell a lot of furniture.
Absolutely.
You know, and they're making furniture and when they aren't in the winter. You
right.
know, they're doing seasonally, they're doing two jobs.
Sure.
They have to.
I want to read you a quote from Kafka.
Sure.
You know, the famous author. But he worked full time at an insurance company. This was found in Daily Rituals, that book I talked about. This is a letter he wrote to his fiance. Time is short. My strength is limited. The office is a horror. The apartment is noisy. And if a pleasant, straightforward life is not possible, then one must try to wriggle through by subtle maneuvers. Subtle maneuvers. That's this past, this two or three incomes. You know, Jasper Johns, the American artist, has a great quote. I always tell students, do something, then do something to that, then do something to that, and pretty soon you have something. So if you can start doing something and then think in decades, in 10 years from now, that something can be pretty substantial. So you don't make any money the first year or two, or maybe you make a small amount of money. You keep doing it and keep adding to it and keep working on it. All the while you've got your day job. All of a sudden, you've got two substantial income streams. Now, it's not going to happen overnight. You know, we have this instant gratification. There's no app for success. All right. It's just there's no app for success. There's an app for everything else. But success is still going to take 10 to 15 years. And you're going to have to do it in a very dynamic, three-dimensional way. So stop thinking that you're just going to get a job for the rest of your life. You're probably going to have 10 jobs in your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And your job may be at risk for being automated. So keep using subtle maneuvers to do what you want, follow your passion, live with purpose at nights and on the weekends, and during the day, just go make the money, pay the bills, manage, you know, your household.
When we read Kafka in high school and thought about that quote, I mean, what that quote symbolizes normally for people is how horrible it was that poor Kafka had to be a bureaucrat.
Oh, I know. Right, exactly.
He should have been in the coffee house writing all day.
Exactly, of course. Right.
And that's the real lesson we get from it,
right.
not what he actually did.
That's right. That's right.
Somehow he still was able to do his art while feeding himself.
Right. And that's the thing, right? So why, I always tell people, follow your passion. Don't ever give that up. But manage your finances as well. Be responsible.
Part of this is related to what we, in historically thinking, we often call engravings. These things, we don't know, but the things that we know or think we know that just aren't the case.
Right.
You have a great quiz. it's basically career assumption quiz, a true false quiz.
Oh, yes.
And let me fire some of these at you, see if you remember these.
Okay.
Perceptions of the variations in economic success among graduates in different majors are exaggerated.
That's true or false? It's very true.
Very true.
Very true. Exaggerated.
So why it is exaggerated?
Yeah, because there's a belief that, if you're a business major, you're always going to be making more money than a philosophy major.
Right.
So in the beginning, at 22, when you graduate college, yes, that's true. The engineering major is going to make more money, the business, the finance. But if you look 20 years down the road, because no one stays 22. This is not. I know. It's hard to believe, right? This is amazing with this kind of statistic when I hear this research. Oh, you never want to major in English, philosophy, history, because you'll never make any money. Really? The long-term data is pretty clear on this. If you manage your career properly, right, take calculated risk and consider all kinds of jobs, you'll be making more money than that business major at 42. And the data is pretty clear on this.
Because the business major eventually has to get an MBA.
Well, they have to get an MBA or they sort of top out because they know one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But the liberal arts major is pretty much open to any path to follow.
Which gets into the Next question. History majors who pursued careers in business ended up earning on average just as much as business
yep,
majors.
Absolutely.
True.
That's true.
Okay.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, the American Association of American Colleges and Universities published a study. Actually, history majors make more than business majors 25 years down the road. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Remember, life's a marathon, not a sprint.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also not a dress rehearsal.
Right.
You don't like get to do it over. Right. And this is why what I've seen so many people that are sad in their 40s and 50s and they wake up and they're like, I don't want to do this anymore. I want to go open up a bakery.
Mm-hmm.
Then go open up a bakery. Or the 21-year-old that comes into my office crying because they're majoring in econ because their mom or dad or aunt or uncle or grandpa told them that's the only way to make money. Really? When they really want to study art, let them study art. Should we just close all? Like, should we just get rid of all the liberal arts majors? Is that what they want? That doesn't even make sense.
We'll get back to that.
Right?
I feel a rant. I feel a rant and rave coming on.
No,
I want to encourage.
Hard to believe.
I want to encourage that later on.
Okay.
True or false? Education is an important determinant of income, but not the only one.
Oh, it's so true, and that really stems from Daniel Kahneman's research at Princeton on the focusing illusion. The focusing illusion is pretty simple. The best example of I haven't seen the sun in 5 days, so I'm starting to get depressed. No. You've chosen to be depressed because you haven't seen the sun. Sun has nothing to do with it. Choose to be happy and don't worry about the weather. And it's fascinating because the same holds true for education. Oh, I don't have the right degree, or I need a graduate degree, or I didn't go to the right school, or I don't have a GPA. Really? So you're shifting blame onto some other entity and not yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And successful people, they don't shift blame. They attack whatever the issue is, and they figure out a way to solve it. It's not going to be easy, and it won't be overnight, but they're not going to blame some other entity because they didn't succeed.
True or false? Employers routinely agree that a candidate's demonstrated capacity to think critically, communicate clearly, and solve complex problems is more important than their major.
Absolutely true. It's research by Hart Associates on behalf of the AACNU again. Very much true. We've had over 190 employers visit Augustana this year.
Mm-hmm.
We've got 80 more coming to the job fair at St. Ambrose next week. We've got a bunch of people coming this week for Lunch and Learns. They'll all say the same thing. With the exception of a few situations, like accounting majors, obviously, for accounting jobs. You would never hire a history major for an accounting job.
Hope not. Yeah.
But with those exceptions, they don't really care about your major. They care about what can you do for them. You know, I've got 16 jobs from companies that have to be filled, and they were like Augie students to fill those positions. Nowhere in the job description does it say you need to be a certain major. But to have skills, analytical skills, communication skills, presentation skills, teamwork, collaboration, absolutely. And when I hire people and interview people, I'm really looking at would they fit into the organizational culture.
Mm-hmm.
And that is way more important than so many other things. Is, you know, let's say I'm having lunch with you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking, you know, should I hire Albert here or not? And I can't even get through lunch with you to this guy.
Mm.
I would never hire you. Forget that you've got the best degrees and the best GPAs.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't fit on my team.
Mm-hmm.
So you try. This is a part of the educational process with the career development here at Augustana, is to get the students to realize there's more to your professional preparation than your degree and your GPA. They're important.
Mm-hmm.
And you should be very happy in studying what you want to study. And you should strive for a good GPA. But if you use it as a crutch, then you're going to be sorely disappointed.
And this relates to the next question, true or false. In industries across the board, employers viewed an internship as the single most important credential for recent grads, more than where you went to school and what you majored in.
Absolutely. They want to see you translate classwork into real-world situations.
So this gets into what you're doing at Augustana.
Yep.
I believe this is an increasing trend. We're going to get to an article from 2009 by Catherine Brooks. I'm sure you're familiar
with her book. Yeah,
Close
sure.
the Gap Between Liberal Arts and Career Services.
Yeah.
But you're heading something Augustana called CORE.
Right.
What is
that? So CORE stands for Careers, Opportunities, Research, and Exploration. And there's 20 offices.
So it's a career office. No, it's not.
It's more than a career. It's a career office on steroids.
Okay.
Yeah, because there's study abroad in there. There's money for fellowships and research scholarship money. We have Augie Choice, a $2,000 award that every student can have access to once in their career for a research or internship or study abroad experience. Mm-hmm. So it's the experiential side of the campus, if you will, to help students translate their classroom learnings into real-world experience, because that's what employers want to hear about. Mm-hmm. And actually, so do law school admissions teams and med school admissions teams. They want to know, like, all right, you've got a nice GPA. What else do you have for me? Because remember, it's really competitive, right? It's really competitive now everywhere. Mm-hmm. So if I'm looking at 100 resumes or 100 applications for 20 seats in a graduate school program, and everybody looks the same GPA-wise, what else do you have to differentiate yourself?
Right.
And that's where this internship comes into play and helping understand how it all works. And we know Augustana has launched two new entrepreneurship venues.
Mm-hmm. What are those?
The Entrepreneurship Certificate.
What's that?
Which is in it's core working with the business department and accounting at Augustana. So the students take an academic curriculum, but then they couple that with experiential internships and entrepreneurship. And then we have the Augustana Creative Enterprise Fund. A donor has given us money, and each year for the next 5 years, we're going to award 3 to 5 grants of $2,000 to $5,000 for students that want to create a venture, nonprofit or for-profit, that's in alignment with Augustana's mission. And these are great ways to show employers that, yes, I've graduated from Augustana with a nice GPA, this major, but I have done these other things to bring value to my community. And that's what employers want. Can you bring value to your community? And it's important for students to understand that they've got to do everything they can to prepare themselves, because the internship is number one. You should never leave college without at least one internship. I would recommend two if you can do it. And there's a lot of funding sources now to do a paid internship.
So CORE, you're basically helping someone craft their life.
Yes, we are. Absolutely. And we work in conjunction with the faculty. Mm-hmm. A lot of faculty now sort of have figured us out because we're brand new. Mm-hmm. And we've worked very hard with faculty to help them understand how we can work with them. But yeah, that's exactly what we do, is we complement the academic side of your experience. Mm-hmm. And there's 20 people to help you out. I mean, there's a lot of people dedicated to this. We're averaging about 100 students a week. Mm-hmm. So we're in the first week of week three. So we've had 20 weeks of school so far. We've had over 2,000 students visit CORE. So yeah, it's a fascinating experiment in helping students prepare for life after Augie.
This relates to this Catherine Brooks article I mentioned. Mm-hmm. She was writing, she had written a book some time ago. This was an article that appeared in 2009 in the Chronicle of Higher Education. Mm-hmm. She was director of liberal arts career services at the University of Texas, Austin. She was wondering, when will academic deans and faculties consider career development an integral part of a liberal arts education? What she discovered was, or she was arguing for, is that what liberal arts needs to stay alive is career services.
Right.
Why?
Well,
I know you agree with her.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for the very fact that employers are, there's three reasons, really. One, employers want to know that regardless of your school, are you prepared professionally? And if the school can't really attest to that, that might, be detrimental to a student. You've got to be able to point to a institutional program of professional preparation. And now we have that. And of course, that's, in score-wise, that's our Viking score, where we're now tracking a student's level of professional preparation. So that's number one. Employers are going to look for it. Number two is students are looking for it. Students want, most of them will say they'll come to college, yes, to get to know themselves, to find themselves, whatever, but really to get a good job. Because they know statistically, again, if you earn a college degree, you're probably more likely to earn more money than a high school, mm-hmm. someone that has just a high school degree. That's pretty clear too. Mm-hmm. So they want to know, like, what can you do to help me prepare? And that's important because, look, again, I taught. My PhD is in history. I taught for a while. It's just not enough to have the academic credentials. You need more. So that's the second. And the third, and that's why I really like Augustana and I came to work here, is your sense of purpose, right? We all have to work. Unless you're independently wealthy, we all have to work. So your work should be tied to your life purpose. And I think that's why liberal arts schools, which are famous for purpose-driven lives, helping people understand, yes, you're going to get a quality education, but you're also going to work with, in this case, CORE, to help you figure out what are the other experiences that could complement your purpose or allow you to explore your purpose. And I love working with for first years because they have a lot of excitement about, let's just say, the medical field. Well, but there's thousands of jobs in the medical field. Maybe you also like to do graphic design. Well, guess what? Go be a medical illustrator.
It's a whole
huge need, a huge need for that. And we've had all the alum that are, you know, graphic medical illustrators. So there are the three reasons why I really think that careers and liberal arts schools need to sort of work closer together. Mm-hmm. I mean, and let's face it, liberal arts schools are under a good deal of pressure.
Right. Because you know? You've alluded to this several times. They want, if a kid's going to come here, they're going to choose business,
right,
even if they're not particularly interested in it.
Right, exactly, because they think that's the right one. Mm-hmm. And what I'm trying to do is, you know, people all the time say, well, why'd you come here? Why'd you uproot your life and go to Augie? I said, because I want to create a revolution in career development for the liberal arts. I want more people to study English and history and philosophy, interdisciplinary studies, sociology, anthropology. You know, the Harvard Business Review has great articles on the value of the liberal arts. And there's a great article recently about an anthropologist that was working with a company, helping them understand how consumers purchase their product. And you take a look at that, and you see that's happening more and more.
Mm-hmm.
So by all means, study what makes you happy, and then let CORE help you figure out the practical applications of that.
Mm-hmm. In her article of 2009, Brooks says, quote, I've heard from numerous professors, our good students go to graduate school.
Yes.
We don't need to focus on those who are looking for jobs.
Right.
I've also been told the professors are too busy teaching to worry about how the students will use their knowledge. It's not their job. As usual, right, when we academics try to shoot ourselves in the foot, we hit the head.
Right. You do a good job of it.
Yeah. We miss the foot.
Right.
Go right for the head.
Well, I think it's really true. The faculty are overwhelmed. I mean, they've got a lot of students to care for, a lot of papers, a lot of tests. I mean, I was one of you. I get it. I completely get it. So in one sense, they're right. It isn't their job. That's why CORE was created.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that's why many of our faculty now just send students over and say, yep, they're go to see CORE. They're the experts. And that's really important. And in terms of the graduate school comment, yes, you know, certain percentage of students will go to graduate school.
Yep.
What about those that don't, Albert?
Yeah.
And we've got to help them.
And only 2% of them actually should go to graduate school.
Right. Well, that's a whole different story. Law school, I mean, law school's enrollment is taking a hit now.
Yes.
46% of recent law school graduates are underemployed. Like, they're working in jobs that don't require a law degree, yet the average debt of a law school student is somewhere in the neighborhood of $90,000, $100,000. I mean, you've got to be really careful if you want to go to law school.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to understand this. And more students and parents are understanding this, and that's why enrollment has dropped recently.
Mm-hmm.
And these are serious life issues.
Yes.
And you've got to treat it as such, but also balance that with uncertainty, right, and cultivation, and realize that you might not have your dream job. I don't even know what that means, by the way.
Right.
Once you get your dream job, do you stop dreaming? I really don't understand that. I think you should have as many dreams as you need three lifetimes to have. That way you're always shooting for the stars. You're never bored. You're always going after something. So just get a job, any job. And then a year or two later, wake up and say, huh, I just worked for a year or two full time. Do I like this? Do I want to change jobs, change industries? I just helped a young alum. She taught for 2 years, doesn't like it anymore, and she wants to completely reinvent herself. Great. And CORE is helping her. I personally, you know, helped her redo the resume and the cover letter, and now she's looking at different fields because it's based on skills, not knowledge. All right, that's what you've got to focus in on. What skills do I have? Not just what knowledge have I obtained? Because employers are going to want your skills, not necessarily your knowledge. I mean, my first job from teaching history was a pharmaceutical consultant. I knew nothing about the pharmaceutical industry, but I had a PhD. I can learn pretty quickly,
uh-huh,
and I wound up presenting to, you know, Fortune 100 brand teams and senior executives. It was pretty cool for this kid, first generation college student out of Philly, just because I focused in on my skills, and I want more people to do that.
So I think that you're getting at something. Some listeners, mm-hmm, to this are parents, mm-hmm, of people, of children, young adults who are about to go to college or in college.
Mm-hmm.
Not all career centers operate like this.
That's right.
What should, going into college, they expect of career services? What should they demand now of a, mm-hmm, career services office?
Well, they should demand three things from any career service. One is you need to find out if they have enough internship opportunities, because that's critical, as you talked about from my quiz. I mean, employers want to know that you've had an internship. Number two, what are they doing to bring employers to campus? That's hugely important, because if employers really aren't visiting your campus, that's a huge concern. Like I said, we've been pretty impressed with our numbers for a small liberal arts school. You know, by the end of this year, we will have invited well north of 200 companies and nonprofit organizations to campus that actually have jobs and internships for our students. And that doesn't include the other hundreds that we have that just don't come to campus for whatever reason. I mean, we've had students intern in 14 countries and 15 states. Mm-hmm. So we're all over the world with our internships. And the third thing is, you have to, and this is hard and this is really picky, but it would be good if you could figure out the theory behind the Career Development Office. Like, I manage our team based off of this thing called the chaos theory of career development, which is what those three C's, you know, we talked about before. You know, chaos is coming. And if you're advising students to get a job and that's the only job you'll ever have and don't worry about it and you'll get it because you've got this degree. No, you've got to tell students, look, chaos is coming. And we're going to help you do whatever we can to help you get your first job. And then we'll be with you as a young alum because things are going to start to happen that are completely out of your control. Mm-hmm. And we want to help you navigate that part of your career. And next year, if I'm going to try to get some people from CORE together, and we want to offer workshops for young alumni around the Midwest, because most of our students are from Chicagoland.
Right.
And I'm really dedicated. I mean, my daughter's 24, my son's 20, so I have a personal connection to young professionals. And I want to make sure that they know that there's a resource there. So if you're a parent looking at a school, I would argue that those are three important things to ask about their Career Services Center.
So what do college students, I think we've already gotten an answer for like three things that college students have to do that career services can't do for them.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of things that college students need to do.
A lot more, but right. I mean, obviously one of them is get an internship.
Right.
Two internships.
Right, but we can help. I mean, the college should be able to help with that. That's absolutely true.
And the other one is go visit recruiters.
Visit recruiters. You got to go to the fairs, go to the lunch and learns. But more importantly than anything, Albert, the thing that a college student needs to do that I can't do or no one can do for them is to keep their mind open. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't tell you how many times students think, I can only work in these three types of jobs. Why? Who told you that? What evidence do you have that that's true? And often the case, they have no evidence. They just believe it for some reason. Mm-hmm. And so when I throw another opportunity their way, they're like, well, I never considered that. Right. And by the way, here's three other things you haven't considered. And if they're not, you know, attracted to it for whatever reason, I can't help them. I'm really trying to help them. But they've got to help themselves. Keep that open mind, you know.
And for that, they have to begin to know themselves.
Right, and that's right.
And
that's why we start
back to Plato.
Right.
And there we are.
That's right. The first part of the book is that because of that. Yeah.
So, if you really want to help someone think through this, I highly recommend Mike Edmondson's Marketing Your Value. Mike, thanks very much for.
Thanks
being
so
here.
Much. Really a pleasure. Thank you, Albert.
It's great having you.
Thank you.
For more historical thinking, go to historicallythinking.org, where you can comment on today's program and find show notes, links, and readings related to today's conversation. Historically Thinking is recorded in the studio of WAUG, the student radio station of Augustana College. Our program's editor is John Ruddat. Beth Leimbach keeps the schedules in sync. Matt Lejas keeps WAUG studio running. I'm your host, Al Zambone. Talk to you next week.